TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's raised by wolves.
It is raised by wolves. What's up, Danny Cunningham?
Nothing.
Nothing going on at all. No breaking news or anything to talk about. No, the Wolves, they have a new president of basketball operations. It is a done deal after weeks of us discussing candidates and who would be the best fit and how what they would bring to the table. We have a president of basketball operations in place now for the Wolves. Gerson Rosas is the guy who spent, 16 years with the Houston Rockets?
The better part of 16 years. He had a three-month stint with the Dallas Mavericks, oddly enough, as their GM. And then basically what I know is that that 3 months didn't go well. The role that he had wasn't really an all-encompassing, powerful role that he thought he was taking. So he stepped down and went back to Houston and has been Daryl Morey's right-hand man ever since.
Now, what year was that?
That was in 2013.
2013. What were the Mavericks doing? Like what were they like at that time? Was that
that was post breakdown the championship team? So nothing spectacular.
Was that the Rondo stretch?
Maybe? No, he was after that.
After that, okay.
Yeah, but it's. I think this is a good hire for the Wolves. I think that this is a hire that. I think it makes sense that they've been talking to smart organizations. They're hiring away a guy from the organization that is the most analytically driven in basketball, and I think that that's something that the Wolves have really lacked at. They haven't been an organization like that. They've been an organization that has largely been stuck in the dark with things like that. So this is a big difference for them, and I think it's a good thing. Now, obviously, you could be listening to this podcast 2 or 3 years from now, and I could be sounding like a moron because we don't know right now, but I think on the surface that this is a really good hire for the Wolves.
I think at least the idea of it is very sound and very solid. I mean, they're at least he's coming from an organization that has been very, like you said, analytically driven, very forward thinking, using a lot of data and information to determine what, you know, how players can have the most success. And we've seen the Rockets do this now for a number of years under Daryl Morey's leadership. So I think it's a really good hire, too. I'm very curious to see what this means for Andrew Wiggins now.
Yeah, and he's been part of some. His role in Houston was Daryl Morey's right-hand man, as I said. He's been integral in some player acquisition and player trades and things like that. And it's worth noting the way the Rockets built their team. James Harden was acquired via trade. Chris Paul was acquired via trade. They've done some really creative. And the Chris Paul trade in specific was a very creative trade, the way that the Rockets kind of loaded up non-guaranteed contracts that they could trade. It was Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, Sam Decker, Montrezl Harrell, Darian Hilliard, DeAndre Liggins, and Kyle Wiltjer. And a protected first-round pick to get Chris Paul. Half of those guys, if you're listening, you have no idea who they are. You know who Patrick Beverley is. You know who Lou Williams is. You know who Montrezl Harrell is. Mm-hmm. You might know Sam Decker. You don't know Darian Hilliard. You probably don't know DeAndre Liggins. And you definitely don't know Kyle Wiltjer. But he's been part of deals like that. And that's obviously that doesn't correlate to getting rid of Andrew Wiggins for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives you hope that, hey, he can be creative. He knows how to operate with other teams. He knows how to go about the trade process. That's where it gives you hope.
I feel like in regards to Wiggins, this is in some ways like a win-win situation, or it could be a win-win situation, because he's either going to find a creative way to unload the Wiggins contract off of this team's books, or with the analytical driven mind that he has, that he's going to find ways to at least make the best that he possibly can out of Andrew Wiggins. We know Andrew Wiggins is very unlikely it's very unlikely that he's ever going to turn into a superstar or maybe even an all-star.
He'll never live up to being a number one overall pick.
But at the very least, you get the sense that Rosas is going to try and find ways to make the best out of Andrew Wiggins as possible.
I think that Andrew Wiggins' role will be defined differently than it has been in the past, and I think that'll be a good thing for him. I think that he'll go from being a player you hope was a superstar to a player that you hope can quote-unquote star in his role. And I think there's a big difference between that, and even if his role becomes sticking him in the corner and having him shoot corner threes, something that he is actually not bad at. There are a lot of things on the basketball floor he's not good at, but that's not one of them. He's a good three-point corner shooter. He just doesn't take enough of them. I think that the analytical data will suggest, hey, you should think about having this guy shoot more corner threes. And if there's a guy that I think will try and implement that, it's Rosas. And I do think that Saunders is also analytically driven. I just don't think he had the opportunity to really implement it in the short stint that he had as the interim head coach. And I do expect him to be the full-time head coach. I'd be surprised if he's not still. But I think that pairing him with a guy that's also analytically driven, I think, is a smart idea for the Wolves.
This team's going to shoot a lot more threes, I think.
I don't think they're not going to look like Houston, though. And that's the initial thing is, oh, they're just going to bomb away from three. No. We all know Houston for what they are right now. But Rosas was also part of the front office that assembled the team that had James Harden and Dwight Howard. Mm-hmm. Like, he was there for the Dwight Howard years, too. So it's not
as if... That was under Kevin McHale. That was pre-Mike D'Antoni.
But right. it was still Daryl Morey and Rosas that assembled the team.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say, oh, they're just going to start bombing away from threes. They might. They absolutely might. But I also think that they'll be smart enough to know, okay, we don't have a team built like the Rockets right now. We don't have a team where it makes sense for us to shoot more threes than anyone else in the league. It's obviously going to make sense to shoot more threes than they previously did, but it's not going to make sense for them to shoot 50 threes a game. Now, will they be 35 to 40? Yeah, probably, but not not what we see Houston at. There will be an increase in threes, but I don't think it'll be this drastic jump from worst to first in the NBA in three-point attempts.
I'm also very curious as to what his staff is going to look like. And what does this mean for Scott Layden, too?
I'm very interested in that. I think that the Scott Layden thing could be... I think we could see Scott Layden still being part of the organization, but I think it could be in a different role. Partly because of his contract, where he's got 2 years and $4 million left on that deal remaining, and you don't want to pay him to do nothing, but you could pay him to do something other than be your general manager, too.
So like a reassignment almost.
You could reassign him, exactly. And then that gives Rosas the opportunity to hire his own right-hand man, which he should have the opportunity to do. It's not fair to him to say, okay, well, we want you to run our organization, but you have to work step in step with this guy. That's not fair. That's a waste of 2 years for him. And I don't think he would have taken the job. And I don't know. I'm not reporting this. This is just a hunch. I don't think he would have taken the job if all of that was being forced upon him. I think that he will have the opportunity to hire his own general manager. And, hey, maybe it is Layden. Maybe he thinks Scott's the right guy for the job. And if that's the case, sure. But maybe he wants someone else. And I think that that's very possible as well.
I think this is going to be big for Karl Anthony Towns, too. I mean, we already know how good Karl is and the potential for growth that he has. But I think you put somebody in place like this, because we've been talking for weeks, months about, you know, the Wolves need to highlight Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, Dane Moore sat in that chair and talked about how they need to try and maximize Karl Anthony Towns in so many different ways. And this just seems like a situation now where that's going to be a focus for Gersan Rosas now, is just how do we maximize Karl Anthony Towns? How do we make him the most efficient offensive big man in this league and turn him into a superstar that we can build this team around?
And that's a great question, but it's one that I think that the Wolves as an organization and Wolves fans have to hope that he has the answer to that.
Yeah.
I think that that's exactly what you need to figure out. And if it doesn't work, you have to figure out how to move on from it and how to get the most for it. You have to figure out how to build a championship contending team. And I think that Rosas has a good idea of it.
So what would you say are the top five duties going forward now as he steps into this role?
I think devising a smart system is something that is very paramount to success. Figuring out a system and taking a deep dive into the numbers, that what's going to work, how do we maximize the talent on this roster? And maybe that's a very different way than the way Houston does, and it very well could be, and I don't think it's going to be. We're not going to see Houston 2.0 right away here. Mm-hmm. We're going to see something else because they just don't have that kind of team. But I think that that's the most important thing. You have to figure out how to maximize what this roster is. You have to evaluate. And I think that scouting for this draft is going to be huge.
Yes.
Because if they can find a guy to pair next to Karl Anthony Towns for the better part of the next decade, then this situation becomes a whole lot more tenable. A whole lot more.
And it feels like when you look at, to your point earlier, about he's been with the Rockets for a long time and he's seen multiple different cores, multiple different coaches,
And multiple different styles of basketball, I think, is the most important part about that. Because, yeah, coaches come and go. Players come and go. Like, everyone has an expiration date. But the fact that they've been willing to change up the style of basketball they've played and take risks in doing so, I think that that's the most important part about that.
I mean, he's been around Jeff Van Gundy when he was coaching the Rockets, Rick Adelman when he was coaching the Rockets, Kevin McHale, and now Mike D'Antoni. And those are four pretty different styles of basketball that the Rockets have had over the course of the last decade and a half that Rosas has been in that organization. So I'm excited about it. I think that this is a good hire. I think when you look at the four names that were left, I mean, we did sort of our own power rankings the other day about these four guys. We both had Chauncey at the bottom, but, you know, the three other guys, I think you could find a lot of different positive reasons why giving those guys the job. So, I mean, this is good. I'm cool with this, man.
I think it's a good hire for them. I think that hiring him, or if they would have hired Trajan Langdon, I think both would have been good moves. But I am very happy with this move. I think that this is a solid move for the Wolves as a franchise. I think it's one that's going to put them in the right direction. Again, in 3 years, I could sound dumb. I could sound like a moron saying that, but I think that the Wolves...
But you could say that about anything, though.
Sure, I think that the Wolves are heading in the right direction. I think this is almost the opposite of the Tom Thibodeau hire. And the thing that I think I'm most impressed with is the fact that Glenn Taylor didn't go back into his comfort zone after the Tibbs hire went wrong, because the Tibbs hire was a very out-of-his-comfort-zone hire. And I don't think that this is an in-his-comfort-zone hire, but I think it's the right move to make.
And they did it quickly.
Relatively.
Relatively quickly. They didn't really waste a whole lot of time. They identified, you know, four candidates that they brought in for interviews, and they made a decision. I think a good decision, at least the idea of it on the surface was very sound, I think. And you know, it's good. I mean, I think that you haven't been here a long time. We've said these sort of things before. I mean, I think a good portion of people, when Tibbs got hired 3 years ago, there was a thought, okay, yeah, I mean, this seems like a good thing because Tibbs was a name and everything. But I think this is different. This feels a little bit different in terms of you're not bringing in a guy that's going to have both roles, and there's not going to be any question marks about that. You have a guy that's going to have a definitive role. He's going to be in charge of everything that goes on. And this is good. This feels a lot different than what it did 3 years ago.
Yes, it does. And I think that Ethan Kasson being here and helping with the search, I think, is huge, because he was hired after they hired Thibodeau and Layden, so he had nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
I think he played a very vital part in making this happen and making it happen the right way and coming out with a good result.
I'm excited.
There's reason to be excited for the first time in a long time. There really is.
I'm excited because, I mean, for you and I, we've been doing this podcast for, you know, basically pretty much a whole NBA season. And, you know, you got past, you know, Tibbs got fired and, you know, Ryan took over and things were looking kind of nice for a little bit. And then you just saw this team sort of go into this, sort of this level of irrelevance almost, where it's just like there's apathy almost.
Well, I mean, you could make the case that that's been the Wolves for the better part of 30 years.
Yeah.
And maybe Rosas is the guy to finally change that. Time will tell, but maybe he is.
Yeah. So I'm excited. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
The lottery coming up here in a couple of weeks. So
May 14th,
so much...
less than 2 weeks away, folks. Mark your calendars.
Count them down, baby. All right. Follow Danny on Twitter at RealDCunningham. Follow me at MannyHill84. And find this podcast, of course, at ScoreNorth.com. Download the Score North app if you have not done that already. You can also find this podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever else you can find podcasts as well. For Danny, I'm Manny. Thanks for listening to Raised by Wolves. The Wolves have a new Pobo. It's Gerson Rosas. We'll talk to you next time. All right, check out Danny Cunningham's appearance on the Mackie and Judd with Rami show on Wednesday, May 1st, after the news broke that Gerson Rosas is the new president of basketball operations for the Timberwolves.
The Wolves today named their new president of basketball operations. It's Gerson Rosas. I think I'm saying that right. They bring him over from the Houston Rockets, and shortly there will be a Raised by Wolves emergency podcast up at ScoreNorth.com and on the ScoreNorth mobile app, which is available in the Apple and Google Play stores. Check it out. Subscribe to your favorite podcast like Raised by Wolves, which is hosted by our Wolves reporter, Danny Cunningham, who joins us now with his thoughts on the hiring. Danny?
How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Just lovely.
Funny how I was in the hallway like an hour ago asking Doogie, so when's this thing going to come to an end? He said what he had been hearing is they were going to cut from 4 to 2 and then have the two finalists go face-to-face with Glenn Taylor. But apparently, according to John Krasinski's reporting, Gerson was so great in both of the last two discussions, it was just game over, Danny.
Well, and I was actually listening to Doogie's podcast as the news broke. Like, I had just gotten past the point in his podcast where he said that he had heard they were going to cut the field from 4 down to 2. And then, obviously, that news broke today. But, obviously, he did really well in that interview process. And I think this is a good hire. On the surface, it's something that looks really good. And time will tell. It could be proven wrong. And this could be a nightmare. We don't know. We'll find out in 3 years. But right now, it looks like a good hire. He's someone that has been part of a franchise that's been very innovative. They've been very analytically at the forefront of analytics in basketball. That's where they've been awesome. And they've done really well in trades. We kind of forget that that's how they acquired James Harden. That's how they acquired Chris Paul. They built their team both through developing guys like Clint Capella, finding a guy like Daniel House, but also they traded for James Harden and Chris Paul both.
How much do we think that Gerson had to do with frontline things, Danny, also like those trades? Like, because that's the thing about hiring a second in command. They can know a lot and they can come off as impressive, but until they're in that chair, you don't know. What's your guess about how key of a role he potentially played behind the scenes in things like the Harden trade and in acquiring talent?
Everything that I've seen points to him being the guy that Daryl Morey would go to, that he was Daryl Morey's right-hand guy. Yes, he was his number two, but he was also pretty instrumental in acquiring some of those guys. And he's been with Houston for the better part of 16 years. He had like a 3-month stint in Dallas where he was the GM there, but it wasn't everything he thought it was going to be. So he resigned and went back to Houston. So I do think that he's had a lot to do with decision-making that's been done in Houston with the Rockets. But it is a difficult thing, like you say, to evaluate executives because we're not inside those rooms. We're not taking part in those conversations. We don't know who's exactly saying what, and we don't know what side of the discussions he's been on for all of these decisions, but we do know that he's been part of them.
Isn't it fascinating? We think, oh, there's like teams shoot threes in the NBA and it's the 3-point revolution. And it is, but there's the 3-point revolution and then there's the Rockets.
Yes.
The Rockets shot 600 more threes than the next closest team in the NBA this year. They ride or die with Mike D'Antoni fun ball, and it's an organizational philosophy. So Danny, I think sort of a two-part question. I mean, Robert Covington is about the only non-big man who can shoot threes on this team right now based on the current roster construction. Do you think we're headed for just a complete dismantling and reshuffling of the roster as soon as this offseason? Or what is the untangling process as you start to blend it with what Rosas's philosophies might be coming in?
They're going to look different than they did this past season, but I wouldn't count on them looking incredibly drastically different right away. Because if you look at some of the teams that Houston has had, and yeah, they've been on the analytical forefront on a lot of these things, but also remember, they had Dwight Howard not too long ago. Like, they were not always this team that just bombed away from threes. They're going to build a system that's going to fit the roster. It's going to be analytically smart, but if that doesn't mean shooting 600 more threes than everyone else in the NBA, then they're not going to do that. They're going to create something that's going to be smart for what they have. They're going to build a system around the personnel that they have to work with, because you can only mold with what you have. You can't go out and grab pieces. And especially with the position the Wolves are in, where they're in salary cap hell for the most part, they can't go out and just build a team from scratch. So he's going to have to build a system based on what he has now. Now, down the line, it could absolutely look drastically different. But as of right now, I wouldn't expect humongous trait changes from right now to next year, but give it 2 or 3 years and I bet the Wolves look incredibly different.
You talked before about the fact that the Rockets weren't built through free agency or through the draft, that it was mostly trades. Is he adept enough? Do you think he'll be adept enough at making trades to improve the team that he can get somebody to take Andrew Wiggins off their hands? And if not, then do you see a path to relevance without getting rid of that contract?
So there is the obvious answer to the path to relevance part is Andrew Wiggins becomes good. Like, that's okay. The obvious answer to that one.
Right.
I don't know if he will. Obviously, no one does right now. And everything that has happened in the past would tell you that he probably won't. Getting rid of that contract would help them a lot. But you also have to think, okay, if they get rid of that contract, they're going to have to take on an equal amount of money. How's that money going to be split up? And that's where you really do have to continue to be creative. The trades that they made were really creative ones too, which the Chris Paul one was incredibly complex. The Paul opted into his contract with the Clippers, and then the Rockets traded Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, Sam Decker, Montrezl Harrell, Darian Hilliard, DeAndre Liggins, and other pieces. They just acquired as many non-guaranteed contracts as they could to send to LA to make this work money-wise. It was one of the most fascinating trades that we've seen in recent NBA history.
So, Mr. Basketball,
hello, Judd.
With all of the hoops,
Mr. Basketball.
How are you, Mr. Hockey?
With all of the hoops, what I like now, non-factor, but what you like is important. So with all of the hoops that you watch and all of the games, the NBA, basically all of the time, we know that this guy and his team like to shoot threes. I get that, okay?
Lots of them.
But when you watch these progressive teams, what subtle things do you see that they do that the Wolves don't sniff right now? What will he bring in as far as changing things that we might not even think right now are a big deal, but you deem to be a big deal and the successful teams do beyond the three-point shot?
If you look at the way that role players operate on successful teams, they all know their place and they all operate really well. It's called, quote-unquote, starring in your role, because not everyone in the NBA is a star, but you can star in your role. Draymond Green is not a star player, but he stars to the absolute maximum ability in his role. Robert Covington is a perfect example of this. He'll never be a star player, but when he's on the floor for the Wolves, he starred in his role. And you need to be able to get guys to buy into the type of system and buy into their role and be absolute stars in it. That's where you see teams like the Rockets right now, for example. PJ Tucker is a guy that stars in his role. Clint Capella stars in his role. They're not superstars, but they give you the absolute maximum thing that they can give you for their role. And it's a very outlined and organized system where their roles are. They know what their roles are, and they know what they have to do, and they do it to the best of their ability. And that's something that the Wolves haven't had enough of.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing I might add to that is not only do you find a star for a role, but you know what roles work in today's NBA, right? Like the Los Angeles Lakers, it was such a first guess when they brought in Magic Johnson and they converted an agent to a GM and said, all right, we're going to get tougher. Well, the Warriors are three-point shooting and the Rockets shoot threes and we're going to get tough. We're going to bring in a bunch of gritty big men like JaVale McGee and Rajon Rondo. It's like, no, that's... good luck. Cool. You're tough. And you got beat by 20 because you can't shoot. And like the Wolves have done a better job of becoming a better shooting team. If you look at we were actually just talking about the 2004 a few days ago for a podcast, the 2004 Western Conference semifinals between the Kings and the Timberwolves.
Well, spoiler alert.
I know, a project to be released soon. And the Timberwolves were averaging that season, and that's the best team in the Western Conference. The Timberwolves were averaging 10 three-pointers per game in the regular season. And then in that series, it was like 16 or 17 per game. And Doug Collins on the broadcast was chiding them like, oh, they're out of their comfort zone. They shouldn't shoot so many threes. Okay, the Wolves were 27th in the NBA in three-point attempts this year per game, and it was 28. So from a Wolves perspective, coming out of sort of the Flip Saunders offense from a few years ago and the Sam Mitchell offense, the Wolves think, oh, we're evolving with the times and we're shooting some more threes. Nah, dude, like the Rockets are shooting 16 more threes than you per game. You're losing the math equation until ideally now you brought in a math professor to run your organization. So we'll find out.
And I do think that Ryan Saunders, if he does stay on as the full-time head coach, which I do expect to happen, I think that he is much more analytically plugged in than Tom Thibodeau ever was, or even than his dad was, or other guys that we've seen at the helm of this organization. I think he's more apt to playing the new school NBA basketball, and I think that Rosas will really complement him in terms of that, because Saunders will want to run an analytically based system, and that's exactly what Rosas is going to want to implement as well.
When you say that Ryan Saunders, you expect him to be the next coach, I'm assuming since the Rosas news was just announced today and we don't know how he feels about Ryan Saunders or anybody else, that you're saying that he won't have much of a choice in that, that that will basically be imposed upon him, who his head coach and maybe GM will be?
He'll have input, but I still think it will be Ryan. And I do think Ryan is qualified.
Oh, I'm not saying he's not. I'm just asking you if you think this is coming from on high and he doesn't really have the final say in terms of who his general manager and coach will be.
I think the general manager is a very different discussion than the coach. I think that there is a much greater chance there's a new general manager than a new head coach. I think that Saunders proved to Glenn Taylor that he can do this, and obviously his family name has something to do with that too. Like, you'd be fooling yourself if you didn't think that was the case. And Ryan's a great dude. He connects with the players. Everyone in that locker room loves Ryan, and they loved to play for him down the stretch. That was part of the reason why the Wolves didn't do a great job of tanking, because those guys cared about Ryan too much to lose on purpose. And not that players ever lose on purpose, but you get what I'm saying. I think the GM thing's entirely different. I'm probably 50-50 right now on if Layden returns, and if he does return, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets put into a different role within the organization, because the Wolves do have to pay him $4 million over the next 2 years. So rather than paying him to do nothing, they can pay him to do something else. It just won't be the general manager.
Well, John Folkey just left for the Charlotte Hornets.
Does he want
maybe
to call
a little pregame radio action? I think maybe that could be a role for him.
So what is the – and also – In what the Wolves are going to do here and approach wise, Danny, what is the role and or shift of importance for the coach as well? Because it seems like sports, and that's probably true of baseball, especially as well. You know, it used to be I get the talent, you coach, and it's your system. And once the game first pitch or the tip goes, it's your game, ball game, etc. But how's that changed now, too? Because it does seem in those sports like there is a lot of give and take and ideas. And beyond a game plan for how to approach tonight's opponent now, it's almost like, no, there's a game plan on a nightly basis for players' roles that is predetermined and is not really supposed to change.
I thought what Matt Thomas said with you guys last segment really rang true, where coaches are now half coaches and half sports psychiatrists, because you have to build relationships with these players. And that's the one thing Ryan can absolutely improve in terms of his in-game adjustments and his game planning. And a lot of that had to be done on the fly because, one, he didn't have a training camp. Two, he didn't have a full staff because he was a former assistant that was really never replaced. And when that's the scenario, it's tough to do. But in terms of the other half of that, Ryan's got a great connection with all those guys in the locker room. They all loved him. No one ever said a bad word about him, even when things weren't going well. You heard the most important employee of the franchise, Karl-Anthony Towns, absolutely give his – he vouched for him as hard as he could towards the end of the season. He said that he wanted Ryan to be the coach on the record. Like, that's not something that doesn't – that doesn't go unnoticed. That matters. And for that to be the case, I think it would be kind of difficult to move on from Ryan at this point. Yeah. I don't think it'd be the right move.
Yeah. So if you're just joining us, if you're just hopping in your car, thank you for listening to Score North. And you can find us however you're listening now. If it's not the app, we highly recommend you download our Score North mobile app, available in both the Apple Store and also the Google Play Store. And the voice that's joining us here is Danny Cunningham from the Raised by Wolves show/podcast and from ScoreNorth.com. And so I think the consensus here is, as bad as things were at the end of the Tom Thibodeau era, for the Wolves to go into this process and not do the search firm thing and identify some really smart candidates, by all accounts, even the finalists that didn't get hired, from Trajan Langdon to Calvin Booth. Chauncey Billups doesn't have the experience, but is a name that's been kicked around with the Cleveland Cavs before. I think on paper, this feels like a home run hire and a home run process, and it's a rare occasion when the Wolves get something right that isn't Flip Saunders. So we'll see. As Danny said earlier, it might take 3 years before we figure this thing out. But if the Wolves are looking to get with the times in the NBA and build something sustainable around Karl-Anthony Towns,
it's a good first step.
It feels like a good first step. So any final thoughts from you, Danny, on this breaking news?
No, I think that what you said rings true, where we're not going to know tomorrow. We're not going to know a year from tomorrow if this was the right move. We can find out in a couple years, and it could be a terrible move. That could be the case. But right now, I like it on the surface. I think that them hiring someone away from a really smart, analytically driven organization is the right idea for an organization that has really been stuck in the dark for far too long.
Yeah. If you want to follow Danny on Twitter, it's just @RealDannyCunningham or Real D Cunningham.
There you
Real
go.
Danny, Real D Cunningham.
Real D Cunningham.
Was there another
D Cunningham? Danny doesn't fit in there.
Actually, there was another Danny Cunningham that I went to high school with. So, yes.
Oh, okay.
You had two Danny Cunninghams in high school?
Yes. Same baseball team.
And he is on Twitter, so you had to go with the real D. Cunningham? Or?
He is on Twitter somewhere. I don't follow him, but he's on Twitter somewhere.
No, there's an at Danny Cunningham. In fact, we've sent a couple notes to our higher-up VIP people at Twitter to try and get Danny. So let's get it trending. Let's get at Danny Cunningham to give up his account,
yeah,
okay?
The account's suspended. Like, no one has it, but I can't have it for some reason.
Suspended?
Yeah.
And it sounds to me like you did something and are not fessing up to it now.
I think that's your burner account. I think that's
what's going
on.
You too many drinks
here.
One night in Madison?
I would never know.
No,
you. It was an account that I think someone didn't use for 7 years and got eliminated, but I can't have it for some reason, and it bothers me.
Man. Danny's going to lose sleep over this every night until it happens.
I haven't slept in weeks, Phil.
Yeah. You don't sleep, you just wait for NBA breaking news.
Yes, exactly.